Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Hello and welcome to the third episode of the fourth season of The Worst Idea of All Time. My name is Tim Batt.
And my name is Guy Montgomery. A pleasure to have you with us, and a pleasure to be with you. Tim, how are
you? Pleasure is a big word. Pretty good. Just trying to measure that lag that we're dealing with today, guys, so I can adjust my vocal cadence accordingly.
Over. Love that strategy, brother. A use of over. That doesn't bode well. So obviously we're still, you know, oceans and large amounts of land apart. Myself in Brooklyn, New York City. Tim, presumptively in Auckland, New Zealand.
You got that right. And Brooklyn features heavily in this here film, Sex and the City, the movie. Is that what it's called, or is it just called Sex and the City?
Question as old as time, and one I refuse to do the research to answer.
Fair enough.
Brooklyn, yeah, it's sort of used as almost a punchline, but you've got to be so bougie, I think, at this point for Brooklyn to truly qualify as a punchline, even in 2008. And bougie is something that these women truly are.
Yeah, it's quite staggering how bougie they are. But before we get on to that, mate, I want to check in with you. I want to share something with you as well. I've just been trying to dabble with alternatives to cow's milk, and I'm here to report almond milk, no substitute for a coffee, I'll tell you that.
Oh, no. Have you just found this out moments ago?
Moments ago. I'm sort of finding it out right now, in a way.
You'd be gutted. A lot of people here have an oat milk. I haven't tried it myself, but yeah, they've gone to the oat.
I wonder if it steams up all right, because I've got this lovely coffee machine gifted to my father-in-law by my father-in-law to me, but the bloody almond milk doesn't steam up well at all. Tastes kind of bitter and gross.
As I recall from my days of being so incompetent as a barista that I was bumped to the till, where I feel like my natural skill set really shone through, any milks that aren't of the cow or dairy are famously more challenging to steam. So it might just be a little trial and error situation you got yourself there.
I do remember lamenting anyone who ordered soy during my brief high school stint at Starbucks. I remember that learning that lesson hard. But maybe I'll return to the soy, give it another go.
Man, you really hit your top shelf, commercial Gilly chains during high school. McDonald's and Starbucks is a beefy fucking resume.
Dude, do you know what was so good about that? I was at McDonald's and then transitioned over to Starbucks, which was, I don't need to tell you, you've already hot wise to it, a huge step up in the high school career game. And the thing about Starbucks in New Zealand is it's owned by this conglomerate, which also owns KFC and Pizza Hut. So if you're an employee of either three of those chains, you get a 20% staff discount at all three outlets. It was a true game changer.
Oh, man. Because I remember that you've spoken, relatively speaking, highly of the McDonald's work experience and the infrastructure they have to help employees, climb the professional ladder. How did Starbucks stack up against that experience?
I had a good boss at Starbucks. We had a great manager, Charlene, in the Jayville Starbucks. She was a bloody gem.
And what were her strengths?
Culture. Big on corporate culture. Making sure we knew the Starbucks way. living the brand, you know? Every cup, an opportunity to impress. Every espresso, a chance to shine.
That is madness. Imagine genuinely trying to instill in your employees the belief that every cup is an opportunity to impress.
That's why you got to get 16-year-olds. It's like what the Catholic Church do. You got to get them young so they're impressionable.
Yeah. As a 16-year-old, you truly, I guess, yeah, your first time working, you buy into whatever work culture there is. You know, well, this is how it is now. Every cup, an opportunity to impress. There's just so much pressure. How many coffees are you cracking out a day and you're treating everyone as a new opportunity?
Yeah. Well, it is. It's a great way to live life. It's high pressure. Everything is as high stakes as everything else. The bar is consistently way above your head. So there's a lot of room for error there. There's a long way to fall, but it's exciting. It makes life very exciting. Do you know, the reason I started working there, Guy, is I was trying to hustle my way into Starbucks because there was this really gorgeous girl at high school who worked there. Who I had a crush on, and then I got the job, and I was like, fuck yes, and then I found out I took her job because she quit. I was like, ah, dang it.
That's actually quite a good little, neat little moment that the universe served you up there. The lesson being,
an opportunity.
By the time you think that it's time to work at Starbucks, you're probably a month too late.
What's the greater extrapolation of that to one's life, Guy?
Well, it's pretty much like, I mean, that particular ethos would suggest that you'll never be satisfied or make the right decision, because anytime something occurs to you, it should have been done a month ago. So
fuck, grim.
Yeah, that is pretty grim. I don't retract it, but I take it back. I notice we haven't spoken one moment about the movie so far. How'd you find
it? We'll get to it. We're going to watch it so many times, man.
Yeah,
I've watched this movie a lot of times.
The spectre of having to come home and watch this movie hung over my entire day. It wasn't wake up, get it out of the way sort of situation. It was like, I know that I have to do this. I can only do this in the moments immediately preceding the record. And that in and of itself was, it's not a enjoyable cloud to look up and see in the skies above. Making it slightly worse, however, when I arrived home, I've got a very finicky key to the second door to my apartment building, and I just could not, for the life of me, make this key work. So I very sweatily, dejectedly, and angrily sat in the stairwell, and it's not quite a foyer, it's more like a holding pen between the second door and the first door to my apartment building, just baking like a potato, watching Sex in the City. I was like, and then every intermittently while the movie was playing, I'd stand up and try my luck again with the keys. Four times I tried.
Oh, no.
I was getting further and further away from the solution, and I was getting angrier and angrier with the subjects in front of me. Compounding the issue, Tim, I arrived 15 minutes late, which meant that I was actually also watching the movie at 1.5 times speed, which just accelerated every part of the process. My heart rate was up. I could see a vein throbbing in my sweaty neck in the reflection of the window as I watched myself watching the movie. It was out and out one of the worst cinema going experiences I can remember recently.
Jesus Christ.
And I mean, oh, how the mighty have fallen. The whole time, all I could think about was me riding on my high horse through screenings one and kind of two. I really feel like I'm right back in the mixer now, and it's not nice.
Akin to Tim turning up at Starbucks full of pep and verve, only to find out she's gone. You with the opportunity to get in the door. Guy, I'm sorry to hear that. Between the four times of you trying the key, was there sort of some call-off periods? Or
Take sort of around five to 10 minutes each time to just be like, okay, we need to get out of our heads, get out of our bodies. Also thinking that, you know, how long would it be? I don't know how many people live in here. Four apartments, I would say probably 15 to 20 people a floor, four level. I'd say there's like, hold on, 60 people in this building, roughly, give or take five. I was expecting one of them to show up quite early in the piece. You know, it wasn't until half an hour, a very friendly gentleman arrived and looked pretty confused, but happily let me in without asking too many questions.
Oh, man. What are you going to do about this door, dude?
That is a problem for later.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, well, if it makes you feel any better, I'm in a situation where I cannot find any way to purchase this movie, so I've been having to rent it each time we do a watch. So I've now rented it for the third time. It's cost me 16 New Zealand dollars.
That is incredible. Also, it's really good data for someone. I mean, you can imagine the person on the other end of that movie order looking at their computer and thinking, Sex in the City, thrice in 3 weeks?
And paying for it. It's not like Netflix where I've got the account and I get on there. I've got to rent this fucking movie every time. It is going to wreak havoc with my algorithms on that particular streaming service. I'm going to get offered up just a hot steaming pile of garbage every time I log on, I expect.
It'll be okay, man. I guess this would be a nice time to bring some positivity or positive energy to the record. Tim, do you have a shining light this week?
Man, I know that this is going to harken back to a long 2 episodes ago, but I was trying to remember the Samantha line again. I know what bit it is, so maybe you could help me with it this time. But it's where she's sort of resigned to the fact that the relationship is going to end with Smith Garrett, and the girls are all talking about it.
So far, so
believable.
One of those
lines she delivers. It's before Carrie says, you know, you just compared your relationship to chemo. It's one of the ones just before that, but it's...
Oh, is it like her making a crack, or is it the earnest comment where she says, Smith stuck with me through chemo, I can stick with him through this?
Yeah. I think it's just before, man, I should really... You know what? Stay tuned for next time, because it's going to be...
To believe that this line, which is purportedly your shining light, is so memorable, your brain literally cannot control itself and file the information away for later use?
Mate, my brain is impervious to times, good or bad. I've got a memory like a sieve. But I do remember each time watching it, and there's just a certain delivery with it, a certain je ne sais quoi that I really enjoy. But I feel like I should pick a shining light that I can remember.
The most apt turn of phrase possible is je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, it's perfect, isn't it?
It truly
literally
is.
I don't know what, right?
Yeah.
You tell me your shining light, and then I might come back.
I'm going to bracket, in a bold move actually, I'm going to bracket two lines together. I think it's from two different characters, but their delivery is similar, and both times I find them to be relatable in the moment. The first is after Carrie shows her brandless wedding dress / suit to Charlotte and Anthony. And they're sort of
monstrosity. Yeah, they can't believe it.
Yeah, they're both absolutely appalled by the very idea of it. However, she says, I'm going to merchandise it up, start up with some shoes. And it's just a very casual sort of offhanded delivery. It's really nice. It's it shows someone who is inhabiting their character. I wouldn't be surprised to hear that some, if not all, of the line is improvised. I really liked it this week. And I've enjoyed it previously, but this week I was like, that is tasty. And then later on, when Carrie gifts St. Louise her own Louis Vuitton handbag, Louise does a very funny little performance where she sort of, mocks up her carrying it around with a slightly hoity-toity air, and she says, "Oh, look who's home from the big city." And I just love that little show. And those moments, they're similar to me, you know, and there's a vulnerability to them and a playfulness. It suggests real intimacy between the friends as opposed to like this sort of scripted patter that we live through.
How would you describe that move that she does with the bag? Because first of all, both great choices, Guy. Can I commend you on both of those moments in the movie? They are, I think, of a type. And I'm right there with you with the shoe one. That's bloody great. The act out with the little bag, I could take or leave, but I understand where you're coming from.
I could hear you giggling along at the memory of the little performance.
Oh, yeah, because it's so vivid. How would you describe that sort of... the move of hanging a bag on your finger, but you kind of have your elbow out and you're sort of holding it backwards to indicate sort of a poshness? It's or a highfalutin nature.
Yeah, I don't know what the word is, but it honestly, it's a lot of fun. And it's something that if I'm carrying a handbag for whatever reason, it's certainly a role that I always keenly inhabit, if only for a moment. Just because, you know, it's the first thing you want to do when you, I guess if you're not, and this is similar to St. Louise's characterization. She's carried her rented handbags before, but never her own Louis Vuitton. And it's almost like you're mocking the idea of someone who actually owns it or uses it, but with love. It's I don't know how to describe it really.
Yeah, no, it's a playful moment, and it was a good choice. It's good you remembered it vividly. You didn't give just the general shape of the scene and then sort of take a stare, but what
I can't believe you have the gall to do that in the first place, and then to re-articulate exactly what you've done further.
Yeah. Well, I've got to learn my lesson, and sometimes self-punishment is the best lesson.
Ain't that the truth? Now, conversely, there was a moment where I found one of the characters' behavior pretty disgraceful. And it's one I'd like to talk to you about because I think it will have a certain relevance to your upcoming life. When the friends very generously and accommodatingly join Carrie on her what is supposed to be a honeymoon in Mexico, and they go out for a meal in the hotel restaurant for the first time after Carrie sort of processed the moping part of her grief.
Yes.
They're all sort of having a good time and they're loosening up and they're starting to feel themselves. And then there's a couple who are, I mean, I think Samantha says, oh, we're all on holiday. And Carrie says, it's supposed to be my honeymoon. And then Miranda says, I think it's their honeymoon. And the camera pans.
Oh, no, hold on for a second. It's a little better than that because they say we're on holiday. And then Carrie says, actually, I think we're on my honeymoon. And then I think it's, not Miranda, is it Samantha who says, actually, I think we're on their honeymoon. So that's kind of funny that they're on their honeymoon, the strangers.
I thought, I don't mind that line. I think, I don't know, I've been associating with Miranda because she has a follow-up line as well. And this is the line that I take issue with, is she says, she like heckles, that they're really into each other. They're going a little, they're giving it what for in the hotel restaurant. And it is frankly a little bit too much. They're smooching pretty aggressively. There's like a body on top of a body as well. But Miranda says, it's all, like, you're all over each other in the first 3 months. And then something even more aggressive, like, but what? Where are you in 3 years or something? Just like a really aggressive heckle to a couple who have and want nothing to do with her. I mean, it doesn't matter how upset you are. You don't fucking wade into someone else, like the happiest, you know, holiday of two people's lives and dump your emotional baggage at their feet. Like that would really stain their evening. And
you're absolutely right.
As a man who is, I understand, about to go on his own honeymoon with your beautiful wife, how would you feel, you know, to come across a jaded, jilted, you know, hurt party who just heckles you?
Well, I do need to preface this by saying that I think both Zoe and I have a little more decorum than to just be sort of dry humping at a fine restaurant. However,
which does decrease the likelihood of the heckle.
Yeah, but which I think is what the movie's trying to get at, is like this is so beyond the pale of being socially acceptable that it warrants this. But I'm with you, guy. They can still get fucked. No one's forcing you to look in that general direction. I don't enjoy going out and seeing huge public displays of affection. Makes me uncomfortable. Don't know why. No, uncomfortable is the wrong word. I'm just like, oh, come on. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
But that's fine. I'm not going to bloody make it their issue. It's my issue.
True, you make Zoe wear gloves when you go out in public?
24/7.
It's a weird one.
As soon as we leave the house. We've all got our little foibles. Hey, I remembered one thing that I'd like to sub in as my shining light, though, because it genuinely is an amazing moment.
Oh, by all means.
Which has led to something which may come back to bite me later on today, because I wanted to hear what you had to say, so I wrote down one word on my hand, and it's in firm ink. Anyway... The moment is they're at Fashion Week and they're just walking out of proceedings, all four gals hanging out, and Samantha has donned a beautiful white fluffy coat. I'm not sure what animal generously gave its life to bring her that piece of fashion, but she's wearing it, which is how
and of course is how the fur industry works. Animals volunteer themselves.
So then,
please take my coat. It's ever so warm.
We come outside, and there's some presumably PETA activists shouting. Two women in particular screaming, "Fur is murder! Fur is murder!" And there's one woman at the front, one woman just behind her. The woman behind her just screams, she does it a couple times like a goddamn parrot, with so much venom on her face. It reminds me actually of this. It's not the same. I'll grant you, it's not the same. There's this historic photo that I've seen come up a couple times online, and I think it's when they were just starting to break down segregation. So it would have been just in the United States when Brown versus the Board of Education was passed by the Supreme Court, breaking down segregated schools. And there's the first African-American students going to the school in the South. I've got a funny feeling it might be Arkansas. It might even be Little Rock. And
Little Rock is in Arkansas. It could be both.
Hey, it could be. Yeah. And there's this very kind of like demure and, well, demure is probably the wrong word, but like, together with it, just keeping your head held high, African-American woman who's walking in, who's the student, and this, white student behind her, this other young, like, I don't know, 16-year-old girl, woman, who's just screaming, and there's just such like anger and pain in her mouth. And that is the face that I saw on that woman. They also spill a whole bunch of red dye on Samantha's coat and scream murder at her. And actually, one of the another shining light, Samantha responds to the situation of just having this coat stained because she's been spending so much time in the West Coast and Los Angeles that she's been away from all of this kerfuffle of New York and its messy social interactions. And she said, "God, I miss New York."
Yeah.
How good is that? Just takes it on your chin. Anyway, I've written the word murder down on my hand now, and I don't think it's going to wash off too easy. So maybe I'll keep my hands in my pockets.
Wow,
when
well
I'm
worth
to
it. Well remembered.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
And certainly, you know, something to bear in mind for future attempts to remember plot details. But I couldn't agree more. She makes me laugh when she yells out murder. It's a commendable extra performance. Again, I feel like we're treading in similar territory. Oh, no, actually, I was going to equate this to when in previous seasons you described us as like prisoners of war. Yeah. I mean, who's to say who that extra was channeling in her performance? And if she dug that deep back to, you know, Little Rock, Arkansas, I mean, all power to her for channeling such a powerful moment. I mean, perhaps, you know, she's a lifetime activist, and she does feel, you know, as passionate about, you know, fur being murder as anyone's felt about anything before. Who's to say? The acting is so good, that's not outside the realm of possibility.
I don't even know if the acting's good, it's just strong. There's a difference between good and strong. You can have a strong coffee that isn't necessarily good. And that's how I would rate this woman's sort of performance in the film. But she's given it a lot. Real 11 out of 10 for effort.
But you think there's a reason that she's not given the bulkier murder lines. She's only given the word to echo back twice or thrice.
That's what I think. And every time I see it, it's something to do with the wardrobe choices they've made for the character as well. But I cannot not see a ardent Bernie Sanders supporter in that woman as well. Like, potentially, she's actually from the state of Vermont. She's like a roadie. She's been following him around everywhere. This woman's got a real backstory, I think, which I look keenly forward to digging into in subsequent episodes. However, today I'd like to bring up something that I messaged you, Guy, and that is about young Brady. Now, there's a moment which could be treated as just a throwaway moment in recognition of the fact that most kids are into Batman, but if the timeline stacks up, this is before Lego Batman, which had a real resurgence of the brand, especially among younger participants, buyers of toys. Brady can't leave the house after Miranda and Steve break up without finding his Batman action figure first. And it got me thinking, Batman, he must be such an important figure in Brady's life, because how did Batman become Batman? Because his parents were taken away from him. And in a not the same, but similar sort of a fashion, Brady is experiencing a situation where his parents are splitting up. So there is a sense of loss associated with his parents as well, and that their relationship is being taken away from him. And I thought, gee willikers, I wonder if this is something. And, you know, they don't have a lot of bats in New York City to be able to channel that sort of angst into, like Bruce Wayne did. But what they do have is a lot of rats. So I feel like this movie is the origin story of Brady the Rat King. And not only that, but I think we're actually seeing one of the formative moments in the young man's life before he descends to the sewers.
Are we to believe that in the same way as Bruce Wayne has a fear of bats from his experience in that cave, that Brady might have developed a fear of rats maybe when running away from home, upset? He comes up across them in quite a scary setting, and then he discovers that if he wants to overcome this challenge and find himself and help get his parents back together, he's got to stop being afraid of rats, and in doing so realizes his power. Is this what I'm to believe?
That is absolutely what you are to believe. This is what's happened.
It's hard to argue with. I recently entertained a theory, which it's almost embarrassing to bring up now, outside of watching Sex and the City, that New York City is in fact a one rat town. And it's a busy rat, is what it is.
Oh, there's just one rat.
There's one rat who is working overtime to sort of, and this could hold true, working overtime to maintain the idea and keep, you know, imprinting the idea that New York City is rampant with rats. It's in fact one overworked, very busy rat. And if you ever see two rats or more in New York City, that's just one of the country rats visiting it's a tourist, yeah.
I see. I don't know if I would believe one rat in New York City, but how few rats do you think they could have got away with to keep this ruse up of pretending that it's like a full infestation?
I'm telling
how many
you,
rats
you know,
minimum.
I reckon you can do it with one. Sometimes I'll get on the train, you know, in Manhattan. I'll see a rat on the line. I'll get off the train. I'll be at a different train station. I'll see the same rat.
Definitely the same rat, you reckon?
Yeah, I reckon almost definitely the same rat.
Busy rat.
Very busy rat. But either way, one rat, 100 rats, 1,000 rats, 10,000 rats, 100,000 rats, 1 million rats You got to come in the way Brady has learned to communicate with them, to take control of them as individuals en masse. And if it is one rat, and look, you know, there's no way to confirm or dispel the myth that it might be. The fact that they've whipped the city into such a frenzy, they've created the illusion of many rats. Is that not just the same thing as many rats in the first place?
Well, no, but only for the reason that there's stuff happening involving the rats while they're out of sight, presumably, like gnawing through walls or wire work or food or what have you, you know?
If there were
no effects that were visible once the rats were out of sight, then I guess it would be infinitely plausible that there's only one rat. But there seems to be some things that are happening behind the scenes.
One public-facing rat, maybe. I just think the rent's expensive. You get ground down.
We've got one handsome rat who has the confidence to strut its stuff out in public, but maybe 60, 70 other rats behind the scenes.
Who knows? Upstate building stuff, developing modes of communication, just working on programs that are better suited to larger areas, less prying eyes.
This makes a lot of sense to me because we're constantly doing medical experiments on rats because their biology is, or maybe it's their genetics, is very similar to humans. And if you think about it, when we form a collective, when we get an organization, there's a lot of people doing stuff behind the scenes, and then we have sort of one spokesperson or spokes rat that we send out to communicate with the public. So this feels right to me. I think you're a very smart man for figuring this out, Guy.
Hey, I appreciate the compliment. And moreover, Tim, today, as I was walking around the island of Manhattan, I came across what can only be described as some pretty powerful anti-rat propaganda. A rubbish bin on which they've sort of printed a wrap that looks like, you know, bricks, like a street. They've written in clear white letters the words, "Let's make NYC clean and rat free."
Oh, whoa, hey.
I've got the picture right here. I can send it to you.
The rats were here before you were, all right?
Hey, look, I didn't print the goddamn propaganda.
Yeah. This isn't for you. This is me yelling into the ether, hoping that some publishers of this horrible material will hear it.
Something.
I've always had a fondness for rats, Guy. Oh. Always wanted one as a pet. They're good creatures.
Are they intelligent?
Yeah, they are, I think. They seem pretty smart.
My first and main memories of rats, or a rat, was, of course, the rat from Bananas in Pyjamas.
I think
quite benevolent, but also an opportunist, would always be sort of hatching these harebrained schemes. And every time the Bananas or any of the Three Bears, what an unlikely group of friends, would sort of be suspect about the rat, he'd say, "Trust me, I'm a rat." And in a way,
that
where I was always...
just makes me want to not trust him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Whenever he said it like that, I was always like, I don't know. It feels like you're overselling it. If you wanted us to trust you, you'd be a little bit more casual about this.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know what my first exposure to a rat was. I think there was at least like someone, a childhood friend, or maybe in the classroom, there was a pet domesticated rat somewhere along the way. But I've always had a keen fondness. I got to get a rat, man. This is the same thing that we do with rats as what we do with rabbits. We consider them pests, but no one kind of flips that on its head and considers that they just really love having kids. They're just good parents, you know? Because to sustain those big families that they build, they got to get food. Got to come from somewhere. We appear to have far too much of the stuff. I mean, God, if I was a rat walking around, I'd be like, Jesus, these guys are pretty big and their cupboards are pretty full. I don't think they're going to mind. And if
absolutely.
We were decent, maybe we wouldn't.
Or, you know, if you're a rabbit and you're living out in your house and someone bloody, you know, comes over to your property, plants a lovely big lettuce there, I mean, whose lettuce is that? You don't even know how to plant a lettuce. All you know is that, you know, from heaven on high, someone's laid down a lovely feast for you. What are you meant to do?
They don't even have this tainted sense of ownership of stuff that we have. It's just, there's something there. Anyone else going to, no? Cool. I'll nip in. Done. Easy.
It is as easy as that.
Each according to their needs. Oh, I can't remember how communism works, actually. I jumped in the pool, but I didn't have my swimmers on.
It's okay. Swim around naked. Tell us your vision of communism right now.
Each according to their needs and abilities. Take what you want.
That's a good end. Take what you want. That feels like one of the main tenets of communism.
I think it is. Take what you need and give what you can. Oh, there we go. That's a good
simplification.
That was
the tagline for Pay It Forward.
Was it?
No, I don't know. It seems unlikely.
Do you think Pay It Forward with Haley Joel Osment was actually communist propaganda hiding in plain sight?
Who's to say? Was that Costner or Spacey? It was Spacey.
Dang it. Another one. Chalk it off.
Yeah. That's off limits.
It's off the list. I didn't mind the watch this week, Guy. I just want to take a bit of a more bird's eye view on it.
Yeah, come on down. Tell me about it.
Well, it was early morning again. We've fallen into something of a rhythm now. So this is just how I start the day, about one in every three mornings at the moment, which is interesting. And I think it's a far better way of approaching the project than what you had in store, by having this grey spectre of a watch hanging over your whole day. I like the fact that I wake up, it's like going for a run, which I can't do anymore because I gave myself a runner's knee. But you just get up, you don't think about it, you just do it. You just jump in, you get into the movie, don't think. And I'm still in bed, so I'm kind of waking up as this movie's playing down. But I feel like I'm getting something done. So it's all right by me. And the movie is nowhere near as bad as Sex and the City 2. Let me put that in stone right now. Far better film, a lot more fun, a lot more story. Everyone's enjoying themselves.
I'm inclined to agree. But saying it's better than Sex and the City 2 is like saying having dinner is better than not having dinner.
Not the perfect analogy, but I see what you're driving at.
Of course it is. I mean, I know that I came at this movie from a bad angle today. I was looking at it funny. It was looking at me funny. But
yeah,
it's still 2.5 hours. And at the end of the day, what's changed in the world of these characters? What have they learned? I mean, what has tangibly changed for these people? Because as far as I can see, Tim, Charlotte's had a daughter. Charlotte and Rungle have a kid. Fantastic. Very happy for them. Big and Carrie got married. I mean, like, it's a lot of treading water. There's no Carrie. One
it's
of the
not treading,
major
no,
could, one of the major plot points for Carrie, Tim. She sells and rebuys her own apartment throughout the movie. How is that plot? There's literally no change.
It's like The Hobbit. This is the hero's journey. You start off with something, and then you want to get somewhere, and then you have to make a personal sacrifice, and then you round off having learned a lesson, but arriving home. So what's happening with Carrie? She wants a... actually, what she wants is tangible stuff. She wants a big-ass apartment. So she goes and tries to get one, and then she discovers that what she actually wants is a bit of security with this apartment as well, which leads her to get married. You know, when you lay it out like this, the capitalism in this film is even worse than I first thought. The real driver for our main protagonist in this film is the fact that she would like a large penthouse New York City apartment, and the only way to make sure you can lock that down without fear of it being taken away from you suddenly in the night is to marry the guy who paid for it. So look, she does it. The personal sacrifice is a little bit of her own personal freedom. This is a woman who identifies as a strong, independent woman. She's lived and breathed New York City, and that entails certain sexual escapades and adventures that you go on. It's part of who she is. It's part of her chocolatey inner being. That's a Equitaine Hunger Force thing. So she goes out, she sacrifices that for the marriage, she puts herself out there, Big fucks it up by not wanting to put himself out there. He can't sacrifice the sort of emotional security of not putting himself out there for a third marriage and his fear, or maybe fourth actually, in fear of screwing that up. And then they work it out and she arrives home, having learned that sometimes you don't have to get married. You can just play the ball as it comes. Does that make any sense?
Then they do get married.
You're not wrong.
And then in the next movie, like, these people are, it's your classic, I mean, it's fine in real life, but this is a movie. This is a constructed reality. Anything can happen. The only drive for plot is capitalism. Or, like, you know, these people have so much money and time on their hands, they can create problems for themselves.
Yeah, the time, time is such a good one in this. Because I keep thinking, here are four professional women. Although Charlotte, does she work? I don't think she works.
No.
She doesn't work in this movie. Three professional women who are just taking like four full days off. Miranda, you'd bloody hear about it, wouldn't you? And you kind of do. First they go to Mexico, so that's for about a week, I think. But then after that they come back to sort out Carrie's apartment, and that's just a full-time job for all of them for another week. It's insanity.
That's before, like, I remember, I actually felt bad for Steve this week. You know, Miranda doesn't have time to let Magda finish her meal when the family and Magda go out for dinner. But then,
we got to talk about that, by the way.
Not one day later, she's got ample time to just go for, four consecutive days and help Carrie pack down her apartment?
Yeah.
It's
a lot.
She's got no time to root. But she's got time to pack with her friend for 4 days. Friends. Before, I understand. I don't know. You know, I'm not married. I don't have a child. I don't know anything about that work-life balance that, you know, is so difficult to get right for anyone. I think, you know, the challenge is especially on women. But, you know, what do you expect Steve to do? And I'm not siding with the cheater. But I tell you what. Did I get goosebumps for a third time when Miranda and Steve were reunited on Brooklyn Bridge this week, Tim? You bet your fucking bottom dollar I did. And it was mostly for Steve, that lovable little face. He was absolutely over the moon. He loves the shit out of this woman, and he knows he made a mistake.
Does. Steve's good, man. He fucked up, and that, you know.
But he owns it.
Pay credence to that.
He owns the problem and tries to make amends, you know, in the most mature way of anyone in this movie. Miranda, who's, and as is pointed out to her, chastises Steve for fucking up, owning up, and then apologizing for it, you know, does a less direct version of all three of those things. She fucks up. She can't get the word across to Carrie. She never finds the right moment. And then, as Carrie rightly says, begs for her forgiveness after 3 days when she can't even talk to Steve after 6 months.
I got a question for you. The moment just before the bridge moment, which gives you goosebumps every time, Miranda is furiously jotting down in a notebook the pros and cons of their marriage and wider relationship to try and establish whether or not she wants to give this another go. Because the arrangement is, if it's on, they're going to meet at the Brooklyn Bridge at a predetermined time and put all of it behind them and sort of start anew. That's what the marriage counselor said for them to do. What triggers her final decision, seemingly in the film, after jotting down all the pros and cons, is she takes a sip of her coffee, catches herself in the mirror, and she's got a milk moustache, which she has at the start of the film in a nice kind of book ending, and Steve points it out to her, and she blows up about him being super critical of her all the time. So, my question to you, Guy Montgomery, is, were that coffee not to give her a milk moustache, were it, dare I say, almond milk, which does not fluff up very good, as I've just learned, and she didn't get that stache and didn't catch herself in the mirror and was reminded of that moment, do you think that she would have thrown the whole thing away? Do you think cow's milk is what saved this relationship?
Look, I think it's just a nice little button. I feel like that was sort of, I felt like she had, as Carrie would say, logically made her decision. But I don't know.
Why would,
like,
Carrie say that? She's a big fan of the word logically.
No, beforehand, she says, Miranda, you're a lawyer. You can argue both sides of any case, but you're going to need to make this decision based on emotion, not logic or something of the like.
Yeah,
and so
right,
I think she's persuaded herself with her list. I have a few of the pros and cons that she lays out for Steve in front of me, if you'd like to hear them, Tim.
I would.
Do you want a pro or a con?
Pro, please.
He's a good father. It's the first pro. It's top of the list of pros. A con is his affair. That's regarded as a con.
Right. Yep. It's fair. What else? What's another pro?
He's sweet. But on the flip side of that, he's also sneaky.
Oh, sneaky. Like a rat. Pro, he's got Mayor in him.
Yeah, yeah. He's mayoral candidate stuff. Under cons, she's written breath, open parenthesis, occasionally, close parenthesis. She's written down watches cartoons before crossing that out and realizing maybe that's not so much of a con. She doesn't like
cartoon.
He's uncomfortable at work functions. He's got nose hair is on her list of cons. There's nose hair. Can you believe it?
With due respect, this film takes pains to point out the fact that Miranda's growing her pubic hair out and all the girls chastise her for it. So, you know,
yeah.
He without sin.
That's right. By and large, I think she's gone through this list and made the decision logically. Then she has a sip of her, you know, she feels good about it. She has a sip of her coffee. She's like, okay, I'm going to go and meet the man I love. Looks up in the mirror and a sign from the universe that this is truly meant to be. She smiles back at herself and away they go. And I'm telling you, man, goosebumps every time. This is cinema at its finest.
Do you also like Miranda?
I remember after a pretty long year of my life feeling like she was the only one with a shred of dignity in my previous experimentation. I do like her. Yeah, I think she doesn't cover herself in glory. I mean, quite so much in this film, and the bar's a little bit higher, I think, from other characters in terms of their basic human decency. I do like Miranda though. In short, yes. Yeah.
Hey, Guy.
Yeah.
Me too, man.
Hey, happy to hear it.
I also like Miranda. I think she's right. She can't, you know, she can be a little obtuse and serious sometimes, but she's
actually
driven. It's two sides of the same coin.
Do you know how I know I like her? When they do that, the wardrobe montage, when they're trying on all the clothes to In Excess or something, Walk This Way, mm-hmm. which, by the way, I was still watching at 1.5 speed today, and that was one of the lowlights. I love when she has when she first comes out wearing the costume. She's the first one who's not Carrie to be trying on these old sort of, you know, fashion items, presumably from the show. I mean, it seems like a pretty easy layup for the movie to, like, you know, dole out some fan service by, you know, walking back some of Carrie's famous costumes. When she comes through that wardrobe door, you know, having a bit of fun herself, my heart swells for her because she is often characterized as the least fun of the four gals. And so to see them, the writers throw her a bone and say, here you go, have a bit of fun with this. And to see the way that she relishes that, I like it. And how I respond to that, it's a greater reaction than when any of the other gals get a turn. That tells me I am a Miranda fan.
Fantastic. That's good. I think that's good. It's good for her. It's good for you. It's good for all of us.
I just realized time's getting on here, man. Have you got anything else you want to clear off your list today?
Put a bow on it, because otherwise we're just going to bleed ourselves dry. We've got another 49 watches of this thing to go, all going to plan.
I see no reason why it wouldn't, Tim. I love this movie. It's a joy to be back in the saddle. I mean, I tell you what, though, today was long, and there were moments.
Well, I appreciate it, and I appreciate the effort that you went to, Guy. That's it's bloody good of you. But, you know, rules are rules. You're going to have to, at some point in the not too distant, make this up with a 75% speed, I think, if the math is. Is it 50% or 75%? You're going to have to make up the work.
I let it slide when you said you dozed a little bit last week. I didn't hold it over you. I didn't say anything. And then I come in here with honesty, with virtue, integrity, and you turn it back on me. I mean, you know, I respect what you're doing in the name of the project, but I also hate the shit out of you for that sort of carry on.
That's fair. It's fair all round. I'm glad you brought that up. And I will. It was actually, I was asleep for a little bit longer than I first suspected based on this watch. I was like, oh yeah, I did miss more than 10 minutes. So what I will be doing is self-flagellating with just a little solo watch of the first 30 minutes of the film, which I'll try and tuck away within the next 48 hours just for old Timbo.
Incredible.
Well, you know, what's the point in doing this if we're not going to do it right? You know, there isn't any.
Be the change you want to see in the world.
This is it. All right, Guy. Pleasure to have a chat to you. A little less of a pleasure to see the movie again, but, you know, rules are rules.
It was also a pleasure to chat with you, Tim Batt, truly a man who finally got carried away.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.